Live from the Next Title Studio, this is News Talk 670 KBOI. This is Minority Friday on 670 KBOI. We talk to Democrats about the latest news in the Idaho legislature. Now here are Paul, Jay, and Chris on 670 KBOI.
Top of the morning. The minority in Minority Friday is even more of a minority today because we don't have him yet at the moment. We were expecting Representative Matt Erpelding, the House Minority Leader, to call in. He was in a meeting at 8 o'clock, I know, and wouldn't be able to make it over to the studio, but he was going to call us on the phone and has not yet. So I'm assuming that meeting went long. We may or may not hear from Matt Erpelding this morning. The good news is it's Open Phones Friday.
Yeah, it is. Open Phones Friday will be until 10 o'clock this morning. If Matt calls, we will obviously stick him on and find out exactly what he wants to talk about.
Mm-hmm. You know the emoluments clause of the Constitution? The clause, I mean, the emoluments clause in the Constitution? It's what Donald Trump's lawyer was talking about at his news conference the other day. He held a press conference, and about 30 minutes of it was his lawyer up there speaking, female. The clause is an anti-bribery provision that forbids any U.S. president from receiving gifts from foreign leaders and is derived from the Latin word emolumentum, meaning profit or gain. The emoluments clause is Article 1, Section 9 of the Constitution. It prohibits any person holding any office of profit or trust under the United States from accepting any present emolument, office, or title of any kind whatsoever from any king, prince, or foreign state.
Wow.
Now, the clause is relevant because Trump is the first U.S. president with a sprawling global business empire.
Yeah.
The most immediate concern has been foreign diplomats booking hotels and conference rooms at Trump hotel properties in order to curry favor with him. According to Trump's lawyer, who briefed reporters, he has decided to donate the proceeds from such stays to the U.S. Treasury as a precaution. So, you know, it sounds like he wants to stay within the rules.
Yeah.
Yet, according to bipartisan ethics lawyers and constitutional scholars, hotel stays are just one of a number of ways foreign governments could seek to curry favor with the new president. For instance, a loan from the Bank of China on one of Trump's Manhattan office buildings could qualify as an emolument, according to former White House ethics lawyers Richard Painter and Norm Eisen, who have been urging him to divest. Other examples include foreign government building permits, tax breaks and subsidies, and even attempts to choke off would-be competitors. Even the conservative Wall Street Journal editorial board has called on him to divest. Trump has at least 28 foreign properties and partnerships that could generate money from foreign officials and trigger a violation of the emoluments clause, according to a USA Today analysis of financial disclosure forms. Beyond those 28 foreign properties are a series of other deals that could expand that list of potential sources of foreign income. Now, Fred Wertheimer, who is the president of government watchdog group Democracy 21, mm-hmm. said in a statement following President-elect Trump's news conference, the decision President-elect Trump has made today creates a completely untenable situation. His actions reflect placing a priority on his personal business interests at the expense of the integrity of his presidency and the interests of the American people. And he went on to say benefits provided by foreign governments or private interests to Trump business ventures and problems that arise with Trump businesses will be benefits and problems that directly involve the president of the United States.
All right. We have Matt Erpelding now on the line. Let's take a break. KBOI News Time, 844. Time for a final check of...
You're listening to Minority Friday on 670 KBOI.
All right. We are back. Minority Friday. Representative Matt Erpelding is mm-hmm. on the line. Good morning,
House,
Matt.
House Minority Leader.
Good morning. Sorry I'm late calling in. Some stuff came up here at the Capitol. I really appreciate you both waiting for me.
Well, you know, your business is more important than ours at the moment. After the governor's State of the State message, the Democrats issued basically their own, message. You were a part of that. What basically would the Democrats like to see happen during this session?
That's a great question. A lot of what the governor put out addresses this strategic vision to improve our workforce and have some 60% of Idahoans over the age of 25 reaching a level of post-high school education beyond high school. So whether that be vocational skills or associate's degree from the College of Western Idaho or a bachelor's degree for Boise State, whatever it is, the goal is to get our entire population statewide up to 60%. So most of what the governor put forth in terms of investing in education, we were incredibly supportive of. We were disappointed that there was no discussion on transportation funding, particularly as Pothole Row out there in Nampa and Caldwell has really developed because of this weather. I mean, it really shows how weak our transportation infrastructure is and how one major weather event can cause us real problems. And so we were disappointed that there was nothing on transportation and transportation infrastructure. And the other place where, we have doubts is we essentially have doubts that the governor is able to influence the majority party enough to accomplish his vision.
Mm. When it comes to the transportation funding, a couple of years ago, some fees were increased, a little bit of tax. And we talked to Republican legislators yesterday and asked them, would that be happening anytime soon again? And they said probably not. If you had a wish, would that be it?
No, I wouldn't say that if I had a wish, that's it. I will say it costs money to fix things. And so folks in Nampa, Caldwell, your area, those legislators need to figure out what their solution is for funding fixes to I-84 and fixes to our eastbound, westbound traffic. And then after we've funded the stuff that's already broken, let's have a conversation about how to put in Highway 16 and really start to grow our infrastructure out there. And if they're not willing to raise gas taxes, certainly I'm not in power. I'm not the one that makes those decisions. Then I say, let those districts, figure it out.
You mentioned 78,000 Idahoans without medical insurance, 10,000 of which are veterans. What would you like to see happen there? Obviously, you'd like to see them gain some coverage.
Oh, absolutely. Here's an even larger concern. As we watch what happens at the federal level, this concept of repeal and replace, I'm looking forward to see what the replacement is. And if there is a replacement, I will do my best to be a supporter of it. But remember that Idaho has a state-based health care exchange that over 100,000 people have benefited from, which means they have insurance. We have one of the most successful health care exchanges in the country in terms of helping get people insurance to allow them to, have that coverage. And these are working folks. The problem is we're running the risk of, if there is a repeal and no solid replacement to that, anybody who got insurance on the healthcare exchange, any benefits that they receive on the healthcare exchange goes away. And so there's 78,000 people who are currently in the gap, 10,000 of which are military veterans, but there's over 100,000 people that are currently getting insurance on the healthcare exchange that are also at risk. So, this is a big wait and see. We hope that the repeal and replace is something responsible. I think this is a real opportunity for the Republican Party to lead on the issue of healthcare. And so I'm just sitting back and hoping that they get it done.
Matt, I mentioned earlier, I said, if you had one wish, would that be it? I'll ask you about that. What would be the Democrats' realistic priority, something that you really can see happening this session, and what would be maybe your fantasy priority?
Huh. That's a great question. I think that we need to continue to invest in teachers in Idaho. Because whether you're a teacher in Montpelier or you're a teacher in Caldwell or you're a teacher in the Boise School District, this movement to the career ladder is the single most important change, and the legislature must follow through with its five-year commitment plan to it. So this year, the career ladder is going to be another discussion, and it is really important to the future of our kids, future of our education system, that we continue to move forward with it. I think the other piece is a secondary goal within Idaho is to ensure that third graders are at a place of efficiency with their reading indicator. And that reading indicator tells us if they're likely to graduate high school. It tells us if they're likely to go to college. And it even predicts if they're likely to enter the criminal justice system. That's how important the reading indicator is. And what we know right now is that 49% of kindergartners are not ready for kindergarten when they enter. And so we need to find an Idaho-based solution, an Idaho solution for how to introduce what some people call pre-K, what other people call early childhood education. What I think is it's really about a school readiness piece, because if they're not ready in kindergarten, they're not going to be ready in third grade. And that is a problem. So what we're hoping for is a solution that allows parents who want to have their children at home come up with some technology tools to get their kids ready for kindergarten, that lets families who want to live in a community and come together with a cooperative to develop a little bit of early childhood education. What a great opportunity for mothers in a place like Weezer to have a family cooperative where they're getting their kids together and developing early childhood education. And then, of course, continuing with site-based early childhood education programs like the one that's here in Boise. It wouldn't cost much state money. It would require the communities to pony up money. It's a series of partnerships. It's a series of collaboratives, and it will drive up that third grade reading indicator, and I think it'll make a real difference for the state of Idaho.
All right, Representative, thank you for calling this morning. We've been talking with Matt Erpelding, the minority leader from District 19 here in Boise. Matt, thanks for taking time out of your busy, busy day to check in with us this morning.
Thank you. I look forward to it, and hopefully I'll talk to you again this session. Have a great day.
All right. Sounds good. Matt Erpelding, KBOI News Time is 8:56. Idaho Talks Live with an Open Phones Friday begins after news at the top of the hour. Get your calls on the way, 336-3700. 1-800-529-KBOI. That's 1-800-529-5264.
KBOI. If you're talking about it,
they're getting nervous, and they should be nervous.
You know, I kind of disagree with what you're saying.
We're talking about it.
You know, I think it's kind of great that you guys have that duality.
This is Idaho Talks Live with Chris Walton and Paul J. Schneider on the News and Talk of Idaho. 670 KBOI.
All right, KBOI News Time, 9:06. Joining us in the next title studio right now is the mayor of the state of Boise, Mr. Dave Beter.
Oh, that would be the city of Boise.
Did I say state of Boise?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm still
like
we
sounded that.
We have had
of Boise.
We have had listeners from outside Boise refer to it that way before.
Right. Well, and you know, Boise State. Boise is not a state. Just making a statement.
There we go. Okay.
Yeah. So, Mayor Beter, what are you going to do about this snow?
Well, Happy New Year, first of all.
Happy New Year to you.
First show of the new year. Well, I tell you, it's been a rough couple of weeks. It's been pretty frustrating for us. You know, obviously, we don't have control over our roads, but a lot of people don't understand that. My office got about 500 calls. Asking to have their roads plowed and what was going on, and we have to give them the answer that we don't control the roads, so call this number at ACHD, and they're not real pleased with that answer.
They think you're passing the buck, right?
They think we're passing the buck, and we're not, so it's real frustrating from that standpoint. And then, you know, it illustrates, I think, the problem with the way we do streets and roads and rights of way in Ada County, because there's no accountability. You know, if you're upset, you're faced with I'm mad at a 5-member board that's chopped into districts. You know, that's a little hard to handle. You don't have a point person. You have an unelected executive director. Where at the city, you know exactly where to go, and that's what they do. Several of my peers, one I knew quite well, or know quite well, the former mayor of Seattle.
Former.
Did right. poorly on the mm-hmm. snow event some years ago up there, and at least in part lost his job because of it. So that's, we mayors understand that. People have been saying to me, aren't you glad you don't have the roads, you know, this last few weeks? And I say, heck no. I would, even with this, you want accountability, you want to be able to serve your citizens, and it's been real frustrating, and I think illustrates the problem that we see too often in other kinds of issues too. I'd lose my job over this performance. I really believe I would and would deserve to. You know, finally we declared a state of emergency for some public safety reasons, largely for procurement so we could get moving quickly. And we were able to really make some impact in about 24 hours. We were really pleased, and so was the public. But that's really not the way to do business. If we had control, we could do that much better and get to these roads quicker. The thing that's toughest, obviously, this is a record snow. We understand that. But what was it? 10 days, almost 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Between snowfalls, when the weather report was saying that, and the snow sat there and then got another dumping on it and another one. And that's really inexcusable.
Had you not made the disaster emergency declaration, what would be worse right now?
Well, a difficulty would be we'd have to go through procurement procedures, which would have taken time, and we wouldn't have been able to marshal the kind of resources. What we were most pleased, we dug downtown out.
And it was a major mess.
And it really was. And a problem for all, you know, all these different users. Also, we've been able to do, I think it's 22 miles of sidewalks along major thoroughfares that we were able to get to. You know, we would have liked to do more, and people's expectations were raised. See, that's the problem. We have no control. If we dig in what about mine? So, but we do think it was the right move. We were able to, you know, make a significant difference in a short amount of time, and I think it illustrates what we'd be able to do. Our snow equipment is largely at the airport, which needs it to stay there.
Right.
But we have some park equipment, you know, some public works equipment, and then, you know, private contractors. So we really think this illustrates that this is a broken system, the wrong way to go, for a host of reasons. But it's just really apparent in this kind of event.
What can the city of Boise do? What can you do about city streets without necessarily having to contact the ACHD?
Well, I hope in this process, and we've been communicating, and we will continue to do that. I hope at a minimum, ACHD understands that they've got to do better. You can't, you know, the policy can't be, well, we'll get to these, you know, few areas and then wait for it to melt. That's just inappropriate. It's unacceptable. So at a minimum, we hope that. But I've never seen this kind of pointed anger about a road issue in the 13 years I've been here. And, you know, there are a couple of different ways to go that at least we're exploring and, you know, thinking about. There is a process to dissolve the highway district. It's a fairly involved process. There also may be some other options. Several years ago, the Urban Land Institute did a significant study of the highway district at the request of the highway district, to their credit. And they said the governing boards of each of the entities, all the cities in the county, should by committee help determine policy and where the funding options go. And, you know, we took that very seriously, wanted to implement that, worked on it for about a year, and it was so, you know, just really a lack of willingness to engage that. There was no traction and no viability given to it. So we'd like to see, you know, at a minimum, again, a better performance, but something like that come back, you know, if not a bigger option that we're also going to look at too, because like I said, I've never seen anything like that, but it illustrates a problem that's ongoing in so many different areas. So
yeah, well put, no traction, I thought.
Do you think the snow could be the impetus to actually start getting that done?
I don't know. Like I said, I've never seen anything like this. And, you know, there's been several other problems, whether it's bike lanes or the way the streets are handled or the lack of roundabouts or, you know, lots of other issues, but I've never seen anything like this, and you know, and we'll see. But I think, you know, there's sort of a continuum of things that we want to see happen. So we'll see how that goes.
We are talking with Boise Mayor Dave Beter. Time to take a break. We'll be back. It's 9:14.
Remember, you are listening to Paul, Jay, and Chris on 670 KBOI.
It's Idaho Talks Live. Our guest is Boise Mayor Dave Beter. A couple of things. We were talking about the snow and the ACHD, and you know, that you guys are limited in what you can do as Boise City. Another subject, you had an open letter to the president that other mayors have been interested in, and you got a lot of praise for it from a lot of different journalists and bloggers and people like that. Tell us about that.
Well, I will. I didn't a while ago now, but, you know, after the election, I think like a lot of people, I was concerned and heard from a lot of people with real concerns about the safety of immigrants and refugees, and really encouraging me to make a statement, to go out publicly. And, you know, we worked on it quite a bit, talked to some folks whose opinions I respect, and decided to do that. You know, in my own example, my grandparents came from the Basque Country. We actually have an old quote from Canyon County paper at the time, really with some really awful things said about Bass at the time. You know, they're clannish and dirty, and we don't want them around here. And largely Idahoans ignored that, and the Bass did well, including my grandparents and her and my mother's family, you know, her sisters. And that pattern is the pattern of America, you know, whether it's Bass in that time, Latino immigrants over the last several decades, or refugees, you know, currently. It's it really is, you know, and it's hard again. We also found quotes as late as the 50s talking about Mexican immigrants in a real derogatory way. And again, Idahoans ignored that. And they've done quite well in the industries that they've supported, you know, are really the backbone of Idaho's economy. So, you know, in the present day, we just see the pattern as the same. Our the services we provide, parks and police and arts and history and all the various things that the city does, we engage members of the community, refugee members of the community, in that same way. And, you know, we don't distinguish between people who have been here longer or just came or where they're from. You know, we all have work to do, and we, you know, we benefit in the same way we have over the years. You know, they start new businesses, again, perform, you know, like my grandparents and other immigrants. You do work that a lot of native-born Americans don't want to do. And we all benefit from that. So it really was just reaffirming that, and that we're a welcoming city, and want to continue that way, and want to see at the federal level that same recognition to, you know, follow the example of Boise.
Legislature's in town.
Yeah.
Any one or two things that you would like to see that would help the cities?
Well, you know, we set a fairly low bar for the legislature. We ask them to do no harm is really our the bar that we set. So, and you know, frankly, that is what we'd like to see, the authority and powers that we have, first of all, to retain those. You know, the sources of the budget, the Urban Renewal Authority. The biggest, our biggest void is the ability to fund public transportation. You can't fund it from the general fund. It's just inadequate. You know, a local option sales tax is what nearly all cities have around the country, and that's the funding source for public transportation virtually everywhere. That would be the one thing, if I could wave a wand or be king for a day. That's besides removing ACHD. The next thing I do would be to grant a local option authority. There's every year there's been a proposed piece of legislation. I imagine we'd like to see one again. I'm not going to hold my breath that it's going to pass, but that would be the one thing that would help more than any. And that's really not asking that much. It's not a tax increase. You have to go to your citizens and have them approve it. You can choose at the local level not to use it at all. It's just really a basic local control kind of issue. We'd love to see that authority. Resort communities have that authority now. A half dozen or so around the state use that and have passed it. Why other local governments don't get that, it doesn't make any sense.
That's interesting. We could just declare this a resort city.
Open a theme park.
Well, that's right. That's right. Skating rinks, I guess, would be the easiest resort activity these days. So,
David, thanks for being here with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Appreciate your visit. Boise Mayor Dave Beter.
See you next month.
All right. KBOI rewards code 13. Forgot to give it. THIRTEEN. Go to 670KBOI.com. Enter 13. Win today's 5,000 rewards points. It's 926.
Is Idaho Talks Live. Today at 10, listen to Rush on 670KBOI.
All right, Paul, Jane, Chris, we are back. Shortened version of an Open Phones Friday this morning. Let's get right to it. Steve of Boise, you're on 670 KBOI. Good morning.
Good morning, guys. Three things. One, you remember all those beautiful icicles that were hanging off your gutter on the second story?
Yep. Second story? Well, nope.
Well, okay, some people that had second stories, you might want to check your roof on the lower story when those icicles fell off. They're very sharp, and if they were of any weight, they could have punctured a hole in your shingles.
Yeah, or your dog.
Or your dog, or
yeah,
I had a
or
friend
you.
Fall on his ladder trying to break them off,
yeah,
but it didn't fall off.
I'm guessing about the time it starts to get warm, roofers are going to have some work to do in this town.
Yes, indeed. Second thing is when that snow piles up against the house, you want to make sure it has an escape route when it starts melting so that it doesn't go under your house through the foundation vent.
If you got it stacked up against the vents, now is the time when it's still freezing out to get rid of it.
Or against the garage, that will not turn out well either.
Yeah. Anyway, the third thing was the Affordable Care Act. I saw in it a sign that they had, Make America Sick Again by repealing Obamacare. You know, I don't get it. Insurance is a financial instrument. It wasn't about lowering the cost of health care. The only thing government can do when they add some regulation is increase the cost. So it makes sense to me that if you repeal it, I mean, it was a rush to get it passed. They didn't even read it, if you remember. It wouldn't hurt a thing. Sure, there's going to be some people that got on the program that will have to make adjustments. But you know what? They did not repeal the indigent care part of caring for the poor people.
Right.
So that's still in place. So all they did was added cost. They didn't really solve the problem. Because you have health insurance doesn't mean you're going to get health care. And a lot of hospitals and stuff, and doctors in particular, are moving away from accepting it.
A lot of the people that seem to be most worried about this going away are the ones with the pre-existing conditions. You know, go ahead.
Those and the politicians, and I understand people, but you know what? We are Americans. We step up and we help people that are in need. We always have, we always will. That's our nature.
Mm-hmm.
We're self-governing, supposedly, and we take care of things like that. And if somebody has a need, we have GoFundMe pages, we have charitable benefactors, we have philanthropists, we have all kinds of ways.
Do you think that would be enough, though, to if we went back to a system like that, would that be enough to solve the problems that have arisen?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
And the reason I say that is because when people have insurance, they go out and have things done that they normally wouldn't do if they couldn't afford it.
That's true.
Because somebody else is paying for it.
Yep.
And that's the whole problem here. If you're not responsible enough to take care of yourself, why should you pass that responsibility on to someone else?
Well, a lot of people, through unfortunate circumstance,
can't. Well, that's what I say, Paul.
Yeah.
Charity is what we do in this country. I mean, when the world has an earthquake, who jumps on the bandwagon and gives the money? The USA.
That's true.
And, you know, same way with the people, you know. I had two neighbors die of cancer across the street from me this year. It was heartbreaking, you know, and they both had insurance, but if they hadn't, you know, I'd have been right there for them. They're my neighbors. They're my friends. That's America.
Yeah. Well, not everybody's like you, Steve. Too bad.
I wish they were.
All right, man.
Hey,
thanks.
It's a beautiful sunshine day. It's an, see you guys.
It
yeah,
is.
Appreciate
bye.
It, Steve. It's kind of an idealized vision of America.
It is.
But I think the reason that a lot of these federal programs and a lot of the things that are like welfare, a lot of that sort of thing came into being is there were a lot of people, regardless of charities, who were still being left out.
No question. Let's go to Gary of Emmett. Gary, good morning.
Good morning, Paul. Good morning, Chris.
Gary, warm thoughts to you.
Warm thoughts to you guys. I'm thinking about climate change with the assurance that at least North American warming is coming in a couple of months. And the reason I know for sure is because they published the spring training schedule.
Ah.
So I'm looking forward to warm things, and I was just hoping you guys could share a couple of warm thought memories for all of us. I've heard a lot about snow clearance and stuff, so I want to hear and think about a little bit of warmth. So I'll let you regale us, if you would, of some warm thought or story, and I'll take it on the air. Thank mm-hmm. you.
All right, thanks. Yeah.
You know,
my favorite time of the year, and since 1973, every March I have gone to Phoenix mm-hmm. for spring training.
Yeah, normally you had to just wait until the basketball season was over.
Yeah, well, and wait till my daughter got her vacation.
Right.
Spring break from school. Well, she's out of school now, so we can go whenever. And we're going the third week in March, and I already got tickets. Going to see the Rangers, pretty good team. We're going to see the Cubs, San Diego, the Diamondbacks. We're going to,
right.
You know, we always take in, we've got tickets for two games. We might go to more, but we are really looking forward to seeing the Cubs and then going by to watch them work out, too. I mean, that's that's all part of it in Arizona.
They got, you know, and they got a bunch of superstars now.
Yeah, my daughter lives in Austin, Texas. High there yesterday, 80. And, you know, in Phoenix, the high was like 62.
The warmest.
I'd take that.
The warmest memory I can think of that doesn't involve an actual wildfire is.
Tell me about one, your uncle's
well,
porch.
Well, yeah. Okay, yeah. I,
in the
that actually wasn't what I was going to tell, but
well,
I can
tell that.
Yeah,
one.
I went
I
to.
Love that
first
story.
Time I ever went to Phoenix was in January, and it was about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. We were sitting out on the porch, and it was 77 degrees. And I thought, why am I not here all the time? And then, yeah. Of course, you find out why in July and August.
It's 177 degrees.
Yeah, exactly. But I went down to Las Vegas once, drove down to Las Vegas, and drove into town on the 4th of July, and it was 116 degrees. And we pulled into where we were going to stay, and I got out, and my feet stuck to the parking lot.
Yeah. I remember getting like a second-degree burn opening a car door
in
Phoenix in July once.
But on days when it's 6 degrees outside, I long for that.
Now I knew why everybody carried a wash rag.
Yeah, I can always get more shoes.
Yeah, yeah. It's great. That's too hot. It's too hot. I went to Austin last year in July. I will never do that again because the heat index was like 111, which is some combination of humidity and temperature.
You know that song?
Nasty.
I like New York in June.
Yeah.
I didn't write that. I've been to New York in June, and that's when it's about 95% humidity and kind of smells like somebody hasn't somebody hasn't cleaned a really large bathroom.
KBOI News Time, 9:44. More phone calls coming up. Hi, till we are back, Paul, Jay, and Chris on an Open Phones Friday. Let's get to it. Rich is up next. Rich, good morning.
Well, I just heard that nonsense from Steve. So if his neighbors wouldn't have had health insurance, Steve would have paid for, like, chemotherapy, drugs, doctor's appointments. And if charities...
No, I don't think that's where he was going. I think... You know,
well, he said,
I know. I kind of agree with you. He hates insurance and doesn't have it.
Yeah. He would have taken over his neighbor's casserole. That's not going to cut it.
Yeah, that's right. Mowed their lawn.
If charities could have taken care of this situation, they would have done it before Obamacare. There are still plenty of people that don't have any kind of health care. If he wants to take care of somebody, he can take care of those people.
78,000 in the state of Idaho.
Yeah, and then there's like 100,000 that are on Obamacare that only have insurance because of Obamacare.
True.
This isn't charities. Religious charities have tried. I mean, I've got to give them credit. They have tried for decades and for longer to help people with all kinds of things, food and all that kind of stuff. They do try, but they will admit they can't do it either. You know, they can't be put on. You know, Newt Gingrich suggested that we just go back to having charities take care of stuff. And all these Catholic charity groups and stuff, they're going, no, we're doing all that we can, and we're not making a dent in it, you know. So, yeah, the Republicans...
I think it's a major philosophical thing. You know, people stay alive now sometimes even when they don't have any quality of life. They stay alive because they can, because of insurance, etc. And back in the old days, Grandpa went out and sat in the sun and passed away in August at home.
Well, yeah, we do spend, they say that most people will spend more than the last 60 days of their life than they spent the rest of it. But on the other hand, can you suggest that we just start letting those people go? I mean, we do spend a lot of money to keep somebody alive for 30 days, you know, but I don't know how to solve that problem. You can't tell people, well, let your family member die. They want to keep them alive for another 2 weeks when, you know, you're really thinking, what's the point, you know what
yeah,
I mean?
I got but a do not resuscitate deal, and so does
yeah,
my wife.
Yeah, it's a hard, I mean, it's that's a hard decision.
Yep, it's philosophical.
That really is, yes.
Yeah. All right, thanks, Rich. And, you know, okay, let's go to Mike. Mike's been waiting. Mike, good morning.
Yeah, hi, Paul J. Hi, Chris.
Hey, Mike.
Hi there.
Hey, got a question. You've heard by now that the Democrats are blaming the Russians, the Chinese, the Japanese, the North Koreans, on and on and on, the Portuguese and anybody that they can for their loss of hacking up the election results.
So pretty much the entire Eastern Hemisphere.
Yeah. With that thought in mind, how come nobody ever hacks my gas bill down to zero in the winter or my electric bill down to zero in the summer?
You know, this hacking thing is so strange because we're obviously hacking them too, right?
Yeah, but...
you never hear about that.
Yeah, you never hear about us hacking them. All we ever hear is theories and what they think is going on.
Yeah.
But like I say, how come nobody ever hacks my utility bills?
You know what? Mike? You're going to have to hack your own utility bills. You come in under another name with another server.
Yeah, I'll see you.
Yeah, all right. Thanks.
Well, yeah, and
I like that.
That's
though.
A good point.
It was
well, and
for
those
that.
And those people who believe in personal responsibility would say it's your responsibility to learn how to illegally hack.
Yeah,
actually, they probably wouldn't say that.
Don't do that. Yeah, but it's a scary time. It's really a scary time, and you're a guy who jumped on the internet, started buying stuff years ago, and I've kind of gone,
I've almost got some of it paid off, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, and every, four, five, 6 months,
right.
Somebody will come out, they've hacked 8 million customers from someplace that you've done business with.
Exactly right.
And you're going, now, what the hell does that mean?
But usually what I say is, oh, well.
Yeah. I got a deal. I'm starting to get stuff in the mail now that says you have pledged X amount of dollars.
When you know you did not.
To cancer research. I didn't do that.
Right.
And they want
that's
me to.
The same, that's the same scam. I mean, it's not as effective.
Here's what they want
but
me
it's
to
the,
do.
It's the same scam that when you send, you just send bills to various businesses' accounts payable, just hoping they won't notice and they'll just pay you.
Yeah. And so.
Bob's Supply or something.
What they want me to do is like put my credit card number there and $20 or whatever it's supposed to be and send it to them.
Yeah.
Duh. That's not a good thing to do. If you don't know where the bill came from, for God's sakes, don't pay it.
Can't see
and don't ever put
there.
Your credit card number and mail it to somebody you don't know.
Yeah.
Ever. Ever.
And, as we have said many times, those companies with whom you deal that are legitimate companies will never send you an email and ask you what your credit card number is just to make sure.
Oh, I got this in snail mail. Unbelievable.
Yeah. They won't send you one of those either.
No. No.
Not the real ones.
Yeah. And, you know, beware of people calling. And if somebody calls in a number you don't know, and just Google that number, they'll tell you.
Yeah. There are websites where you can see complaints that other people have registered about the same number.
Bingo.
Yeah. And it'll be just like your experience.
Yeah. KBOI News Time is 9:55. We'll be off for the Martin Luther King holiday on Monday. And we'll see you back here bright and early Tuesday morning. Have a good weekend. Stay warm.